spot market implementation, 318 market specific minimum liquidity ratio, and 319 core system fee capture mechanisms. I guess we could start with 317. Who's the presenter for 317?
Or Noah, do you want to actually do 318 and 319 first? Because I think Noah mentioned he has to leave like 30 or 45 minutes in.
Yeah, I might have to hop off. So if we could start with the others, my hope is that they'll be relatively brief presentations. So,
sure, go ahead. Let's start with 318 then.
Cool. So both 318 and 319 are core system upgrades for V3 that sort of pave the way for more permissionless markets and the more of the sort of platform setup we want to get to. Ultimately, we'll talk about the spot market and then V3 perps market eventually, which we're going to like initially stand up on the system and make sure everything's working. But again, we just want to make sure we have all the pieces in place to sort of get to that ultimate goal. So currently, there's a global configuration on the V3 system called the minimum liquidity ratio. And there are a couple factors. You can think of this sort of like an issuance ratio. But for a market. So depositors mint and withdraw stablecoins, or mint and burn stablecoins, and markets deposit and withdraw stablecoins. It's a similar mechanism on both ends. But the idea behind the minimum liquidity ratio, basically, it's determining how much after a depositor, LP, staker, whatever we want to call them, has delegated collateral to a market. We need to set how much of that credit capacity. There needs to be a buffer of what debt they're able to accumulate of the from stablecoins, and that's the role of this minimum liquidity ratio. So the idea is, long term, we would set a fairly high default minimum liquidity ratio. That's a current global setting. But then if there are markets that are Spartan Council controlled or integrators and they're immutable and we see that the way they're working is basically safe for the protocol and safe for the stablecoin, we would be able to bring the minimum liquidity ratio down for those markets. And that would effectively increase their capital efficiency. So this SIP is just adding that functionality that we'd be able to override the minimum liquidity ratio for specific markets. Right now, because all of the markets, or at least initially, because all of the markets will be Spartan Council controlled, we can leave it at sort of a lower number. But when we want to open this up more publicly, we'll want to raise that default, but then still allow us to bring the number back down for markets that are approved in our control, sort of the risk is considered contained. So that's 318 in a nutshell.
Just to confirm, intend maintaining God mode in terms of liquidity ratios, even in markets that aren't otherwise controlled by the Spartan Council?
Yeah. So there's a global setting, which again, in this future scenario, would be set relatively high. And that would be used by, that would be the default sort of set, the God mode sort of set by governance and used for permissionless markets. And then this upgrade would allow governance to bring that number back down for specific markets.
Got it.
Now, what would be the liquidity ratio set on V3? Is it like 500%? Or how does it...
I think we've defaulted it to 200%, but we could adjust that. It's less of a concern right now while we don't have permissionless markets, because we're going to be, because the markets are monitored and sort of under our control right now. I think ultimately we would need to have the default minimum liquidity ratio be the same as the highest issuance ratio among the collateral types. Because otherwise, you would just be able to set up a market and then mint effectively, like with the market that you set up, mint to, using that lower issuance ratio. So I think in practice, it'll look like whatever the highest issuance ratio is for the riskiest collateral type. But it's all configurable, and we can sort of cross that bridge when we get there.
So. Like the liquidity ratio for SNX deposits of collateral? Is it going to be configured at 500%? That was my question. Or does it work differently?
Yeah, so the liquidity ratio isn't collateral type specific. Once the liquidity has been pooled, like we have vaults of specific collateral, once that liquidity and that credit, it gets pooled, then it's dollar denominated. And so on the market side, it's not collateral type specific. But if SNX were a collateral type with an issuance ratio of 400-500%, let's say 500%, it would make sense to have the minimum liquidity, the default like global minimum liquidity ratio, no lower than 500%, because otherwise someone could just set up a market and then mint against their own collateral at that lower number.
What's the intuition behind having the ratio not based on the type of the collateral or the nature of the collateral?
Well, once the collateral has been pooled, we don't really like from an accounting standpoint, the market isn't exactly we're not like specifying how much of that credit capacity has come from which types of collateral. And especially if we do cross-chain pool synthesis, then like even further, like it sort of becomes dollars once you get to the just a dollar amount once we get to the pool level.
Sure, but like it seems to be more reasonable to me to have a ratio that's specific to collaterals rather than pools, because it's pool based, right? Or
It's market based. Well, currently it's global, but the proposal is to also have a setting that's market based. For depositors, okay. Minting and burning, that's collateral type specific.
Okay, so let's say we have the S-ETH perp market, the ETH perp market, and someone wants to provide collateral to. I provide liquidity credit to that market, and he has some SNX, like let's say $1,000, and he provides liquidity to that market at let's say 500% C ratio. So that's like $200 worth of so worth of credit, but like another pool has $1,000 worth of ETH, and they want to provide credit to that same ETH per market. And that ETH guy is also subject to the same liquidity ratio?
The liquidity ratio is only relevant to the market and how much the market's able to withdraw. So this is more about if the S-ETH perps market or whatever needed to like pay out a lot of stable coins to a trader. The question is, at what point does the core system say, hey, you have no more credit capacity, you can no longer be drawing out stable coins relative to the amount of the value of the collateral that's been delegated to that market. For the LPs, the depositor stakers that might be minting stable coins against their loans, that is still collateral type specific, and the amount that they're able to take out would vary based on the collateral type.
I think it's a bit to absorb, you know. I'm not really familiar with most of the underlying concepts of PERPS V3, so if you can, please tell me again. Go ahead.
Sorry. I think I could you can understand like the motivation for why it's a global thing. It is like basically when we were thinking about all the different collateral types and like the canonical fund where you can actually take an SUSD loan, we were like, okay, yeah, you could limit the C ratio that you let people issue SUSD at, but like eventually if we want to have permissionless markets, I can just go and create my own permissionless market. And issue like, you know, max SUSD all the way up to my liquidation point, right? So it's kind of a way of like getting around the issuance, like the loan issuance mechanism. And so that's where the idea was thought of to have like a global minimum liquidity ratio that is basically like the liquidity ratio for the worst collateral. You can't even take on more debt than that in any market, even for permissionless markets. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm just like trying to reconcile the idea that you have some collaterals that are much more liquid than others. And so they mm-hmm. would be able to have lower minimum liquidity ratios. But having right. less, yeah, that's what I'm trying to get straight in my head.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the minimum liquidity ratio, again, is more intended to be market specific. So like worst case scenario, we would want that ratio to be equivalent to the most volatile collateral type to avoid the sort of workaround exploit that Afif was describing. But then if we see a market is basically like well behaved, that number could be brought down for that market specifically. And on that sort of end of the system, it's not collateral type specific.
So there are two liquidity ratios. There's the minimum one set by the market, and there's another one set by the pool, right? Or
no. So there's an issuance ratio per collateral type for stakers. That's essentially what they're able to take a loan out against. Then there's a global minimum liquidity ratio that's not collateral type specific, which in this future state would be relatively high for permissionless markets. And then the proposal is for specific markets, we can bring that number down.
Perfect. Now it makes sense. I that was what was confusing me, that I thought cool. they're just like this ratio, but there's like several others. And this is like the global minimum per market. So, okay.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, we're also working on a diagram that we can probably get wrapped up next week that outlines some of this in a little more detail. So that might be helpful as well.
All right, no more questions on 318. We can go ahead and move on to SIP 319, core system fee capture mechanism.
Great. Yeah. So So as I was outlining before, as far as the core system is concerned, separate from the markets, there are basically it's you can think of it as primarily like fundamentally responsible for the stablecoin. And there are sort of four ways that stablecoins go in and out of the system. There's minting and burning, which is on the LP side. And then when they delegate collateral through pools to markets, markets can then deposit and withdraw stablecoins. Functionally, it's very similar to minting and burning. It's just that the debt that's being accrued or the debt that's being relieved by the market trickles down to the LPs that have delegated. So the intention with 319 is to just add some SCCP configurable settings here to be able to collect a fee on mint, burn, deposit, and withdraw. So this isn't opinionated about what the fee structure would be or where it would go. It would just be a knob for each, a separate knob for each of those four functions to set a percentage and then where, and then a receiving smart contract for those fees that can then decide where to what to do with those fees.
I assume they will be all set to zero at inception, or
that's the idea. Yeah, I mean we could do an SCCP and set it up with a number when we first stand it up, but initially because we'll just launch with markets that we're building. Fees can be collected on exchange. We'll get into that with the spot market presentation. So fees can also be collected on exchange and then divvied up at that level as well. But this is, again, in a world with permissionless markets, if someone is plugged in their implementation, we might want to collect some fees there.
So what's the point, or what's the intuition behind? Sorry, Connor, if I'm asking questions without...
It's question time. Go ahead.
So what's the intuition behind adding friction to jumping between markets? What's the core idea behind it? Why is it useful?
It's not friction. It's to say that, like, from the core system standpoint, in a world where the markets are, where we could have other market implementers building on the system, then we would need to have some sort of incentive structure, or we would want to have there be a sort of revenue source or incentive structure for the core protocol itself. And so the opportunity for that is, shy of some sort of interest rate on the loans, is when the stable coins are coming in and out of the system.
All right, perfect.
All right, any other questions for SIP319? All right, last presentation for the evening is SIP317, Spot Markets.
Sorry, I know, one last question, if possible. Why do we have a D18 in the variable names?
Oh, that's it's a good question. That's a convention that we've picked up in the V3 code base to just denote that that's a number denominated with 18 decimal places.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Connor.
Okay. So 317. Cool. So 317 is the V3 spot market set. It kind of has a few different themes kind of tied into one. It's all packaged into one market. So first there's two concepts. One is like the settlement strategy, which is like how are trades being executed? What's the oracle? Is it atomic or asynchronous? And then there's what fees are being used. And there's a few different types of fees. There's like traditional exchange fees, and then there's like a skew fee, which is kind of similar to the premium discount function in perps v2. And then there's another type of like utilization fee / coupled interest rate type fee. So that's the high level overview of like all the things in here. And I'll kind of cover some of the use cases now and how those fit in. So first, settlement strategies. There's basically atomic and asynchronous. Atomic is kind of like how atomic swaps work now. It can you can basically configure the Oracle Manager to use whatever feeds and whatever like processing of price feed information that you want. And then it would have its own set of fee parameters and stuff. I would say that we're taking a similar approach to perps v2, and that probably asynchronous settlement will be a lot more popular if it's executed, right? So asynchronous kind of has a similar pattern to also to how perps v2 works right now. There's a commitment transaction and then a settlement transaction where the Oracle is updated with some off-chain price data. So I'll just pause there right now for a second and see if there are any questions on settlement strategies. I think that's the more straightforward part.
The atomic orders allows exchanges for stable coins. We're not making any dumb assumptions like a stable coin pegged to a USD is always a USD. Are we?
Oh yeah, no, that's just atomic like as we have now, like SNX USD to SNX ETH and vice versa, like those kinds of atomics. There's also, I guess one thing I didn't touch on in the beginning is like there is also like wraps and unwraps that go under market provided collateral, which I think was covered already in the presentation. The wraps and unwraps would all be like the market provided collateral will be managed the same way wrappers are managed now. So they would have to be onboarded by governance. The limits would be set by governance, so on and so forth. So in that case, your question that what you were asking about might apply because like you might not want to allow a certain stablecoin to be wrapped because wrapping kind of does introduce that one-to-one assumption. Yeah. Okay. So basically, like, there's two different types of spot market use cases that we're imagining here.
I just want to chime in with one thing on the asynchronous orders. Like, currently we've implemented the on-chain settlement strategy, sort of similar to fee reclamation, and we have the PIF stuff set up. It'll be fairly straightforward for us to add an additional Chainlink settlement strategy once their on-demand oracle is ready to go, and we're in touch with them on that. But that's why it's not included in the SIP right now. Cool. Sorry, Ed. Keep going. Sorry.
Cool. All good. Market use cases. So one, I think, arises from like a lot of the lessons learned in V2X. So it's one is that like it's hard to scale spot synths in a capital efficient way. You need to like have a really aggressive C ratio, let's say, if people are going to hedge, you know, a lot of debt. Minted against their debt. And it's kind of hard to do in a capital efficient way. And so that's where the concept of wrappers came in to scale synths more effectively without having to lower C ratio too much. So the synth supply is not constrained by the monetary policy of the system. But then wrappers come with their own set of risks in that they can introduce a lot of directional risk in the debt pool. And they can create a lot more debt volatility for stakers. So those lessons are kind of packaged into this spot market set. So the first type of spot market we're imagining would be like a delta neutral spot market, which basically is like the spot analog to perps v2. So how does that work? If somebody wants to buy ETH, let's say, you would go to a curve pool, take whatever stable coin you have, acquire some SUSD, and then swap that to SETH or SNX ETH. And then if there's wrapped ETH, you could do the unwrap, right? And you could get ETH. So that's like a cross-asset swap. And what we would do is that like the market would be stood up to target always kind of having a balance. So when somebody does that buy, they create some long skew. And that would create a premium the same way that perps v2 would create a premium when someone longs. On the other side, you could have somebody who wants to sell ETH. So they would have to send ETH to the market and the market could issue them SETH. And then they would swap the SETH for SUSD and then send SUSD to their favorite liquidity pool and get whatever stablecoin they like. What we saw in V2X was like lots of ETH being wrapped and then subsequently converted into SUSD as a source of SUSD, created a lot of short ETH skew in the debt pool. But with this market design, it allows us to manage that with this thing called a skew fee, which basically creates a higher and higher fee if you're going long. And then it creates like a negative fee for somebody to sell into it and like earn the negative fee to restore the balance. And then does the same thing when somebody is selling ETH to the market, it creates a negative fee for somebody to buy ETH from the market. So I'll pause there to see if there are any questions before I go to the second spot market type. I saw one question from Kev in the chat. I don't know if his mic maybe isn't working.
No, I just don't want to interrupt your flow.
Oh, okay. So delayed orders, like obviously, like they don't have the same composability as spot orders. A lot of aggregators have kind of shifted towards delayed settlement anyway, like 1-inch fusion and CowSwap and stuff. And so we're actively looking at ways that we can make the delayed order implementation very friendly to those so that we could provide, the best execution for all the traders who are already committing to delayed settlement. So yeah, it breaks composability a little bit, but I think the efficiency gains will more than compensate for that. And it's becoming more like accepted anyway to do these things asynchronously. So we think we'd be well positioned for that.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So I guess like one other implication here is that you could do this with any market that you can have an ERC20. So like, let's say you had like a spot S-Link market, you could do the same thing where somebody wants to buy Link, creates, you know, some long skew, and then that creates a premium for somebody to wrap Link and sell for SUSD. And basically what this creates is that like the SUSD is fungible across all markets, and it's indirectly backed by all of the wrapped collateral. And you can basically have like the deepest exchange markets on chain for anything with an ERC20 that can be wrapped like that. So you could have, you know, Link, DeFi tokens, ETH, whatever, TBTC, if we ever use it, if there's like a sufficiently decentralized tokenized BTC, all of those things can be used for market provided collateral, and then all of them collectively would back the stable coin while providing extremely deep spot liquidity on chain. Cool. I was typing. Kat, is that going to be a question or should I go on to the second part?
No, good.
Okay. All right. So I'll go on to the second part. So the second part is related to these non-delta neutral markets, and they're the way that people traditionally think of spot sits. I wouldn't imagine these being super attractive for SNX collateral, but it's possible because you just have to mint at such a high C ratio, and you only really like the main source of fees is from turnover, and if you have like a very high C ratio and not as much turnover, like these are mostly spot sints that are designed to be held. We can, for anything with an ERC20 that are we're hoping will be maximally turning over and generating a lot of fees, like we could just use the delta neutral market. But this, I imagine, for spot sints that are just designed to be held, like if somebody wants to make, you know, it could be a tokenized BTC or it could be a tokenized Euro or any of those things that can be done in a totally decentralized, trustless way. This would be the way to create those. So it's the second market that basically has this. The motivation for this was thinking about how permissionless markets might work. So let's say I provide liquidity to a permissionless spot sync market, and me and a bunch of people are all providing liquidity to this market, and it gets maxed out. So everybody is now holding, you know, SXYZ. So what happens if the stakers who are providing liquidity to SXYZ want to leave? If the liquidity was maxed out and a bunch of people leave, the stakers who are left over end up being more leveraged, right? But if you prevent them from leaving, then basically the holders of SXYZ can hold the stakers for SXYZ hostage. So it's kind of like the same game theory that you see in automated money markets, like Compound or Aave. So we kind of basically borrowed a lot of concepts from that, where there's basically a concept of a target, you know, amount of that of exposure for that cent that the stakers want, and then that target amount can have some amount of utilization. And the higher the utilization, the higher the interest rate. And the interest rate has to be done through basically like a decay token or a rebase token, where if it's fully utilized, then your balance of that token in your wallet would just decline, you know, over time. And that reduces the debt for all the people staking to it. So it could create an incentive for more staked collateral to come in and stake to that market to lower the interest rate and earn the interest rate through debt reduction. Or it might encourage holders of that token to burn it and repay it to free up some of the utilization capacity. So in the SIP, that's, yeah, it would kill composability, but it's, well, I'm not sure it does. I mean, Aave tokens and other rebase tokens, yeah, it hurts composability, but I mean, we're not saying like we expect this to be widely used. It's the only way to make this sort of spot, this sort of spot market work in a permissionless way. So it would kind of have to be for people who just want to hold the SIPs. Yeah, or you could have some wrapper or something like that higher up the stack, sure. we just want to have a solid foundation to kind of create agreements like this so that you can have a token that does what it's supposed to do and doesn't trap the LPs on the other side, and then kind of go from there. So there's in the SIP, it's like there's the interest rate slash decay, and then there's like the utilization fee, which basically we didn't want 100% utilization to be kind of like a hard stop, because that, you know, lacks some of the elegance. So instead, we just had a fee that ramps up when you go past 100% utilization. So in theory, you could long much more than the stakers wanted to take on, but you would pay a really high fee to do it. So it kind of just creates like a smoothing of that boundary at 100% utilization. I think I more or less covered everything in the set. Noah or Sunny, if I missed anything, please feel free to chime in. And then also, if there are any questions, now would be a good time.
So I have an issue with one aspect of this SIP, and that is default set within the fee management section. Mm-hmm. So the line is, by default, fees are deposited to the core system, reducing the debt of those backing the market pro rata. The issue for me there is that it doesn't assume by default that it's SNX token stakers that are receiving fees, which until a separate SIP is passed, I believe should be assumed to be the default. For that reason, I mean, I would be more comfortable if the default instead were a rewards distributor was within a SIP specified to be distributed pro rata to SNX backers, with a subsequent SIP then having to be passed once multi-collateral staking is on, that would divert staking fees, would divert fees in a different way.
I think what's proposed in the SIP assumes status quo and just SNX collateral. We can shore up some of the language to make note of what would be, because we wouldn't, I would never imagine permissionless markets with SNX collateral. So we could add some of those clarifications, like what you're talking about. I think that would definitely make sense.
Yeah, specifically the ambiguity around those backing the market, because
sure,
that doesn't assume that it's SNX stakers who are backing the market.
There's also this concept of a fee collector, which can be configured per market. And that fee collector now can take any percentage of the fees that are generated. It's just that the default is whatever's not collected will be like deposited into the market manager, which then obviously gets distributed pro rata. But that is an SDTP, configurable thing, where we can specify the fee collector and we can, the fee collector can be configured whichever way we want, where we distribute the rewards to SNX stakers or whatever.
Is the fee collector you're referencing the one that is contained in a SIP we've already passed?
No, it should probably be included in this. If it's not, we'll make that change.
Yeah. That sounds good. If there could be some expansion on language, just like I say, I think it's good to defend the status quo in the writing. The SNX stakers know that default is always going to be that they receive fees, and if additional collaterals are implemented, there is a hurdle that has to be overcome in terms of governance before that can occur.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yep. Yeah, we could definitely add clarity around that.
So a couple of questions regarding the utilization rate fee. So from what I understand here is that if we exceed 100% of the credit, then a fee would kick in. But I'm trying to wrap my head around it. So if someone, stakers provided $100 to this market, And how would this market be able to ramp up the utilization fee once it exceeds that $100 in capacity?
So it's actually, yeah, so think of it more like exposure, right? Just to make sure we're on the same page, it's just that, like, exposure of the synth and not necessarily that the credit capacity, like, has been depleted and everybody got liquidated. Like, imagine that, like, you don't want more than 100 ETH of exposure, and somebody just comes and buys 100 ETH, right? You haven't taken on any debt because ETH hasn't gone up or down yet, but you're just at your exposure limit, right? Are you on the same page there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. And then so what's the question from there?
How does the utilization...
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. My question is about the utilization fee computation.
It's basically just charged for orders that are increasing the utilization past 100, and it just kind of takes, like, the integral average. It increases linearly past 100%, and then it'll just take the integral average from, like, you know, point A to point B and give you your average fee. And it's only for increasing utilization past 100. Decreasing would just have the incur the normal exchange fee.
Absolutely, but my question is, like, the slope, how is it specified of the utilization fee?
It's a configurable value. Sunny, can you confirm that?
Yep, you can specify per market a configurable leverage that you want exposure to.
And the slope of the ramp for the utilization fee past 100% utilization, that's also a configurable value, right?
The slope is basically, can you explain the slope? Sorry.
You know how, the utilization fee gets higher and higher as if you buy more and more past 100%, right?
Yep. Yeah, that is so configurable. How... Yes. Sorry. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Like, is it a number like 2, for example, and like when we increase from 100% to, let's say, 150%? So is it like that 50% times some number that's yep. what you get? Or?
How yeah, exactly. Fit? Yeah, you multiply 50 by whatever this configurable value is, and then that's how you get the percentage.
Okay, I think it works. So same goes for the DK. How does it materialize? What's the How does it work?
You said the ZK?
DK, the I understand.
Oh, the decay?
Word. Yeah.
Like, how does it work technically, or how does it, like, conceptually work?
No, conceptually, I understand. It's about, but, like, does it DK with a configurable single value, or is there something more to it?
Oh, yeah. So it'll have a, you know how, like, you see, like, those hockey stick charts for utilization and interest rates on, like, for like, compound or Aave markets?
Yeah.
It'll basically work like that, where you have, like, a very slow ramp up to some point, and then, like, at, like, 80% utilization, you have a steep ramp, like a discontinuity. And then that just determines what the interest rate is, and then anytime it's changed, it updates the interest rate and updates the rate that your balance decays. Basically works really similar to how those work, how, like, A tokens work.
So how do you configure, which parameters do get, like, I don't see any parameters in this. It should be helpful, you know, to maybe there's too many and that's why you just, like, refer to it. but like so how does DK get is there, like, a parameter that sets steepness or when does the ramp up start or stuff like that?
Yeah, like I'll say that this isn't fully all built out yet. And like that's why we're presenting it now. And I think we've put a lot more energy into the SKU fee side of things, like that use case.
That's one I understand. That's why I understand.
We haven't hammered on this side as much, but yeah, basically the idea is like you have boundaries set. So first ramp start end, and then the second ramp end. So there's just two segments of the curve, and then you have the slope for curve one and slope for curve two. And then, so for any utilization, you could always check, you know, what should the corresponding interest rate be?
Perfect. So there are two slopes and a breaking point between them, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Great. That's everything from my side. Thank you for the answers.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions on the spot market implementation?
I see a lot of people typing, so some of those might be questions. Oh, nope, they're talking about words.
All right, well.
Steve, what's the rationale mm-hmm. with the old motivation with the interest rate being charged by the, the issuer or the pool? Because I believe normally what we see is that people who are creating the SIMs are the ones who are almost like a borrower, and they would want to, I just want to understand what's the motivation or what's it based off that interest rate.
Yeah, basically, like you have these two competing forces, right? Like you have demand for the synth and supply of liquidity willing to back that synth. And you have to have kind of a way for one side to respond to the other. So like kind of how I was mentioning a situation at the beginning where like, let's say like it's fully utilized, everybody wants this synth. And then now like, you know, it's S gold and, you know, the Fed comes out and cuts rates and like to zero, and suddenly nobody wants to be exposed to gold debt anymore, right? All the stakers leave, 90% of them. We were at full utilization before, but now 90% of the stakers left. So the 10% who are left there, their debt is now 10 times more volatile, right? Because it's 10 times the amount of gold exposure than you wanted to target. So we have market locking that can lock the LPs so that that beyond a certain point, LPs can't withdraw, similar to how like if an Aave market is at 100% utilization, I can't withdraw all of my collateral out. But what that does is it raises the interest rate to something really high, right? So that one way or another, I'll be able to get my collateral either from the tokens, you know, disappearing from a really high interest rate, or more likely from holders of that token burning it and reducing the debt so that the utilization is going down, and then I can withdraw as the reduction of utilization permits. So like in reality, we would hope that most of these markets would typically operate at lower levels of utilization. And so it wouldn't really get to that extreme interest rate. But if for some reason there's a run from, you know, liquidity providers wanting to leave, we have to make sure that they can't leave beyond a certain point. And that if they do, there's another lever that's in play to like create an incentive for holders of the SINT to repay. And this was the best way we could come up with for that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, let's say, could they not just have to pay more of, like, they have to repay that SINT using some other asset rather than rebasing their token?
But like you're assuming there's turnover. What if they just want to hold it? Levy the interest on static collateral that isn't turning over, static debt.
Yes. So I understand the market owner can actually charge the interest or set an interest rate if they want. But this is to unwind S gold is issued, the gold, and they want to unwind that. I just couldn't understand the part where, like, because you're going to have a lot of issues with a rebase token that has some kind of, like, you know, a lot of the stuff like AMMs won't work with that.
Yeah, I mean, we basically included it just because, like, there's no other really good way to do this that's economically viable. I mean, the spot synth model in B2X is you know, it doesn't really work because nobody's paying any interest. So the stakers aren't paying any interest on their debt, and the synth holders get, you know, free assets that they don't have to pay any interest on.
So the issuer has to lock some kind of collateral to issue the synths.
They don't directly issue the synths. They just delegate their credit to the synth market, and then somebody else can turn up to the synth market with SNX USD that they got from somewhere else, and then they could buy the synth that way. And then when they buy the synth, now my debt becomes denominated in that synth as it gets used.
Makes sense. Okay, so your motivation is to have the actual issuer, but isn't it? Because you mentioned you want people to repay and burn those synths by increasing the rate.
Uh huh.
Couldn't you charge to someone who's issuing that, like charge it?
Yeah. So we have that. Well, somebody who. I'm not sure what you mean, because the people who create the synths are when they buy it. There's no direct issuance. Like everybody who stakes their debt is when they start is in SUSD. And it only, the composition of their debt only changes as people buy the synth. So the issuer is not like issuing S gold and dumping it into a liquidity pool. They're just delegating credit to the S gold market. And then as that credit gets consumed by S gold longs, now I have S gold debt. But there's no actual coupling between the issuer and the debt. So you can say, like, okay, like the utilization is too high. We want to prevent people from continuing to buy more of this and creating more of this synth into existence. And we have that. That's the utilization fee past 100%. That makes it expensive to do. But it doesn't prevent what happens when you get to 100%. You haven't charged that yet, and now all the LPs want to leave. What do you do? There's no mechanism to wind down the debt gracefully in a way that doesn't let one side hold the other side.
Trying to introduce some kind of funding. It's almost trying to do some kind of like funding cost to holding.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Out of skew. Okay, understood. So it's not similar to, it's not, you know, I'm coming back to the comparison of, like, you know, people who borrow people who borrow DAI or issue DAI and they pay the stability fee. I thought the analogy was more like that. Okay.
Interesting. No, it's more like Rye.
More like Rye, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. I think, yeah, it might be interesting to look at some other ways to do it, but I don't have anything on top of my mind for something like that. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to other ideas. Like, I personally think the skew fee, like, spot market type is going to be way more popular and productive and useful, but there was a lot of like concerns voiced in the community that people wanted to have a way to preserve this type of market that doesn't, you know, doesn't have a wrappable token and can be created permissionlessly. And so, like, we did find a way to do it that works. It's not as good as the other ways, but we'll see if the demand for it makes up for that.
Okay. Yeah, the rebase. Yeah. Thanks, Matthew.
Mm-hmm. Good questions.
All right, great. If there are no other questions, I guess we can call that here. Are all of these ready for a vote?
No, 317 needs some changes.
I think, yeah, we're going to make some updates to 317, and then we could probably set them all up for a vote next week. Tara, you don't mean to represent, right? We'll just make those changes and then do the vote next week.
Yeah, just give me a chance to look over the changes if that's right.
Sure. Yeah, cool.
All right, great. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, all.
Thanks.